إليك الأكثرين الأنزلين به نتولى ومن أعضائهم نتبرع من الأرض. اللهم كن وليك المجتهد الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى أعضائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك ترضى وتمتعه فيها قليلا.
صل على محمد.
Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam in his wasiyya to his son mentions quite a few points. And yesterday it was said that wajahid billah haqqa jihadin, and strive as you should be striving in the way of Allah. And it was mentioned that various kinds of jihad, which very beautifully Zain just mentioned them. And among them it's that we have to strive in the way of Allah. And this striving, this jihad, it could be either by the shedding of our blood, or it is earning, learning, working hard, or it could be also the cultural jihad that a person can perform. One of the things to which a lot of emphasis has been given in this deen throughout the Holy Quran, it's striving and working hard in educating ourselves or building ourselves. And that can be by way of worship. And to worship there is a lot of importance. For example, when it comes to worship, we have to have a set program for ourselves. Prayers on time, du'as on time, Quran on time. It shouldn't be just messed up. Everything accurate, on time. And if that program is carried out accurately, benefits also are seen in this world hereafter as well. An example can be mentioned of Yam Rahum Ajullah Ismail Bahjar, who lived for about a century. Now this old man, his program was such, now this was for more than 50 years without any break. And those who were very close to him, they say, for about 70 years, this was his program without any break at all. Starts his day 1 or 2 hours before Fajr, and then Fajr prayers are performed in Jamaat. And after that Fajr prayers, he comes straight to the shrine of Hazrat Ma'asumah. There he stands, recites the Ziyarat Ashura, complete with that 100 lam and salam. This is his daily routine, and I myself saw him many times when he was studying. And this old man used to come and stand inside that shrine and perform this ziyarat. And after that he comes back home. And his son says that his daily program was to offer this namaz ja'far al-tayyar. Namaz ja'far al-tayyar, it's one of those beautiful dynamic prayers which performs miracles. That if someone wants something, he can get it from this prayer. And even this namaz ja'far al-tayyar, it has that the regular one, and there is one for the premium mu'mineen. That is, they perform that namaz ja'far al-tayyar in a different way. That is very detailed. And he does that every day. Performing ziyarat, reciting ziyarat, jamaat and kabira was his daily program. In addition to all those recitals, azkars, prayers, and in one of these, and many a times his son said that we used to tell him it's too much and Allah doesn't want that much from you. Instead of this, so that we come up with excuses that he reduces his time in worship and increases in study, we used to tell him that all these students, they want to benefit from you, so you can give a little bit more time to education and to teaching them and reduce the time from worship. He says, if I reduce the time from this worship, I don't need to study that much. But Allah compensates through worship, and the amount of time I need to spend in studying, that is reduced by 70%. just because of this worship. So worship, it plays that important part, and among those hot spots or those blessed occasions when worship is very beneficial and fruitful, it's that time before Fajr. What is, we call it as Sahar, the time when we perform the Salah. And at that time, it shouldn't be just eating. We work this dua, Sahar, and it is the practice of the noble that they recite dua Abu Hamza every day, and it is mustahab for this month. All these fans, if you could produce. So. And the time of Sahar is that glorious time wherein a person benefits a lot. And for that, Quran says, وَقُرْآنَ الْفَجْرِ إِنَّ قُرْآنَ الْفَجْرِ كَانَ مَشْهُودًا, that when it comes to your recitation of Quran, you can do that anytime. But Quran says, Quran before Fajr. Prior to your Fajr prayers, recite Quran, and an ayat of this Quran says, إِنَّ قُرْآنَ الْفَجْرِ كَانَ مَشْهُودًا. Now whatever we do in this world, we are creating witnesses for us or witnesses against us in the hereafter. If a good action is being done and we have a lot of witnesses, then the file of ours, the folder is going to be much heavier. Here Quran says that when you recite Quran before Fajr, kana mashhuda. Mashhud means it's witness. Now what does it mean? There are angels for the night, there are angels for the day. That is, whatsoever we do, there are these angels who do the night service. So they are there watching our amals, our actions, and towards the Fajr, their shift changes. These angels return and the angels of the day, they come and take charge. Here Quran says, when you recite that Quran before Fajr, you've got a lot more witnesses. Those angels who were working in the night shift, they've seen you reciting Quran. And those angels who will take the charge in the morning, and they see you reciting Quran, you've got almost a double amount of witnesses who've seen you reciting Quran. So that has a beautiful impact. In addition to that, we've got these night prayers to be offered. Now, if whatever is possible for you, it's 11 rakat. If you can't say them while you are standing, you can say them while you are sitting. And if all of those 11 rakat are not possible for you, at least do the 2 and the 1, the shaf and the watr. If that 2 is too much for you, at least do the watr prayers, the 1 rakat prayer, purwatan in Allah. So that way, now many a time people, they take on board a lot from these a'mal and worship, and they can just carry it for 1 or 2 or 3 days, very lucky for a week. That is not good. If you want to take these things on board, may that be reciting Quran, may that be du'as, may that be these nawafil, slowly, gradually. Even if you go to gym, they don't ask you to do 2 hours of exercise in one go. Slowly, 10 minutes, work out for 15 minutes, and then slowly that muscle grows. Just by seeing that muscle pop up for the first 2 days, we don't say that there is no one better than us. So that is a gradual process which takes years and years. The same thing in the fields of spirituality, everything has to be taken on board slowly. So if you can't do that 11, try it with that just 1 rakat prayer. Slowly, when you've got used to it, increase it with another 2 rakat, 3 rakat prayers for a few days. And ulama, they say that if you do something for 40 days, after the 41st day, it will become guaranteed, it will be part of your program. You will not miss it out. May that be dua, may that be Quran, whatever it is, slowly, gradually top it up. إِنَّ نَاشَأَةَ اللَّيْلِ هِيَ أَشَدُّ وَطْئًا وَأَقْوَمُ قِيلًا. And this time of night, it is very important. In the Quran, on many occasions, we find that night is mubarak, night is blessed. إِنَّا أَنزَلْنَاهُ فِي لَيْلَةِ الْقَدْرِ. Quran was revealed at night. Or there says, Subhanalladhi asra bi'abdihi laylan. That Rasulullah, when he ascends to the heavens, it wasn't during the day. Says, his servant was taken from Masjid al-Haram to Masjid al-Aqsa at night. And there are loads of ayat that talk about this riwayat. Many that say that night is important, that we have to benefit from these nights, especially the moments towards the Fajr prayers. It shouldn't be as such that we just sleep away and wake up towards the time of sunrise and say our prayers. Try and make it a habit to be up a bit earlier and say those prayers on time, inshallah. And the reward which Quran talks about doesn't mention if someone is up at that time, how much and what he will benefit, doesn't say that. Says, لا تعلم نفس ما أخفي لهم من قرة أعين جزاء بما كانوا يعملون. Says that no soul knows that what is hidden over there at night, that what joy is hidden, and what a person will benefit from that night. Now in this wasiyya, salawat. So, says in this wasiyya, وَجَاهِدْ فِي اللَّهِ حَقَّ جَهَادِهِ. You have to strive. It means that laziness is disliked, laziness is hated, and one has to constantly work so that he benefits from his life. Continues and says, خُذِ الْغَمَرَاتِ إِلَى الْحَقِّ حَيْثُ كَانَ. That in knowing haq, one must get into the fierce waves of calamities. That is, when we want to know what right is, we want to know what haq is, it isn't as such that haq will come to you very easily. We have to work hard and go after that haq. And here in this wasiyya, Imam says that one has to get into these very difficult problems and calamities in order to get to that haq. And a similar quote can be seen from Ma'asumeen. They say that أُطْلُبِ الْعِلْمُ وَلَوْ بِخَوْفِ اللُّجَتْ وَشَقِّ الْمُؤْمِنِ. Says that to fight being lazy, one has to be strong and fight the struggles at one places. But even when you want to learn and you want to seek knowledge, it is as if you have to go through these fierce waves and oceans until you get to your destination. Now, when it comes to knowing deen, here Amir al-Mu'mineen says that you have to strive, that jihad is required. In addition to that, he continues and concludes saying that فَالنِعْمَ الْخَلْقَ السَّبْرِ. That is, for reaching to your goals and destination, in this field a lot of patience is required. Now may that be for even learning and knowing deen, that is required. So sabr also, we did mention that the other day, that sabr is classified into three stages, that when it comes to your worship, all those wajibat, patience is required, that with patience you have to perform your duty. When it comes to refraining from sins, patience is required to put away that wrong. And at the same time, when calamities fall down upon an individual, patience is required. It shouldn't be as such that when something falls down on us, for example, what they say as natural disasters, like earthquakes, etc. Natural disasters, we don't have anything as such. All these disasters are man-made disasters. This was mentioned yesterday that Allah has designed, and there is a set amount of rain for every land, and that has to pour down on that land. Those raindrops do not pour as a result of sinning. If that nation is committing a lot of wrong and sins, Allah instructs those clouds to go and pour down in an ocean, so that they don't benefit from those rain, from that rain. The same thing is over here with these disasters. If we see a disaster, it isn't as such that it was something which happened with Mother Nature. No. It's the wrong that we do. As a result of that wrong, that wrath of Allah we invite, and in the form of disasters. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam says, As-sabr nisf al-iman. Patience is half of your iman. If you are patient in every affliction, in every bala, in every wajib, in every haram, with that patience you have secured half of your iman, half of your faith. الصبر رأس الإيمان. Patience, it is the head of Iman. And then Imam continues in this procedure, says, وَالْجِ نَفْسَكَ فِي الْأُمُورِ كُلَّهَا إِلَىٰ إِلَٰهِكَ. That is, in brief, says that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, He is the shelter, He is the refuge, He is the safe haven in this entire creation. In all affairs, submit yourself to your Lord. Why is that? Says, indeed, فَإِنَّكَ تُرْجِعُهَا إِلَىٰ كَهْفٍ حَرِيزٍ وَمَانَ عَزِيزٍ. That is, indeed, you have got hold of a strong shelter and a safe haven. That is, if you cling to Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala in every wa'akhlis fil mas'alati lirabbik. And then says, and seek all your needs from your Lord. Everything you want to ask Him. No other door to be knocked, only Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. فَإِنَّ بِيَدِهِ الْعَطَاءُ وَالْحِرْمَانُ. Now why does he say that you ask Allah? He says, because in His hands is giving, and it is in His hands that He can abstain, He can stop giving. So in both cases, because He is the one who bestows upon you, you ask Him. Because He is the one who will refrain that blessing getting to you, you have to knock on His door. And then says, وَأَكْثِرَ الْإِسْتِخَارَ وَتَفَحَّمْ وَسِيْكَتِي. Says Hassan, increase and always seek good, and that also a lot, and understand my advice, and do not be neglectful towards it, to this procedure. So many things have been mentioned. There are lots of dangers that we see throughout our life. Sometimes in this worldly life, we see dangers which are material dangers. For example, something happens and our wealth is lost. A person is hit, health is lost. It may so happen that the honor, the dignity of an individual is tarnished, defamation. Sometimes it's these diseases that take place that hit our souls, spiritual attacks. So that is a danger. Or dangers that you will see in Barzakh. We have to be afraid of these dangers. So normally man, he is afraid of all these variety of dangers which he sees in his life. Sometimes it's this waswasa, satanic attacks. So people are afraid of that too. Sometimes they are afraid of attacks that would take place on our aqidah, which we see today a lot in different formats. That deen is being attacked, faith is being tarnished, and all these doubts and confusions are created so that minds become polluted, as a result of which deen is weakened. Sometimes this attack is a moral attack. So which of these dangers is most harmful, whether it's material danger, spiritual danger, attack on deen, attack on faith, or honor, dignity, wealth, health of an individual, which one of these dangers is more? That depends on one's iman and faith. That if that iman and faith is strong, he can handle these dangers easily. Many a times people, they think that material danger is the greatest danger. The reason for that, they think that the materialist existence or the wealth that they have, the property, the assets that they have, they are real. When in fact, they are not real. Real is something else. Real is the existence of Allah, and everything which is connected to Allah, that is real. Everything else is fake. So material dangers, they are not real dangers. Thing has been given to us today, if it's taken away from us tomorrow, doesn't matter. The rightful owner of that was someone else, and that is Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. If He gives us, we have to be thankful. If He takes it away from us, we have to be pleased. That is what His destiny is, and that is His divine command and decree. For that we have to teach ourselves. So a mu'min, he is never disturbed in material losses. No matter how much of a big loss that may be, we have to be patient, we have to be sabr. Now in all of these dangers, Imam says that وَأَنْجَ, that is, you have to seek shelter from فالأمور كلها إلى إلهك. That is, you have to seek shelter, refuge. That safe haven has to be your Lord. I'll give you an example how that is. During the time, about 150 years ago, in Iraq there was a plague. And the ulama of that time, people, they come to them, and now this is being reported from Marhum Sheikh Abdul Karim Haqiri. He is the founder of the Hawza Ilmiya of Qom. He goes that when he was studying in Najaf, there was a plague at that time, and people in large numbers were being killed. He says that people, they came to complain and to ask the ulama there to do something, to pray so that this bala is removed. In that majlis, Ayatollah Mirza Shirazi, who we talked about yesterday, he was present. He says, if I decree to you, will that be binding? Will that be obligatory? Will you do it? Everyone unanimously, they say that whatever you say, we will do it. He said, I command, instruct the Shias here to recite Ziyarat Ashura for 10 days and dedicate the sawab of this Ziyarat to Hazrat Narjis, the mother of Imam al-Asr, ajalallahu ta'ala farajah al-sharif. Until this bala is removed, everyone has to recite. And that Ziyarat Ashura was with those 100 la and salam. And then says that everyone recited, and from the next day none of the Shias were killed in that plague. So that is how a person can get help from that safe haven, which Amirul Mu'mineen talks about and says that وَأَلْجِئْ نَفْسَكَ فِي الْأُمُورِ كُلِّهَا إِلَىٰ إِلَٰهِكَ. That is, in every affair, in every task, you get help from Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, which is the true shelter, which is the safe haven. Now if you look into this hadith of Qudsi there, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, He swears and says, وَعِزَّتِي وَجَلَالِي. That is, by my dignity, by my honor, وَارْتِفَاعِي عَلَىٰ عَرْشِي, and by my position, my rank, my exaltedness. Of what is that? Says, لَأُقَتَّعَنَّ أَمَلَ كُلِّ مُؤَمَّلٍ غَيْرِي بِالْيَأْسِ. That is, whosoever has hope in anyone apart from me, says, I will break all of his hopes. لَأُقَتَّعَنَّ, in Arabic, it's with all that emphasis, that I will definitely break all the hopes of that one individual who has hopes in others but Allah. So when Allah emphasizes, we have to know that no matter which door we knock, He can break that hope. And He will break. Here He says, He will break. And that's it. Then He says, not only will I break His hopes, says, وَلَأَكْسُوَنَّهُ ثَوْبَ الْمَذَلَّةِ عِنْدَ النَّاسِ. Once again, with all that strong emphasis, says, I will definitely clothe him in defamation and wretchedness before people. Why? Because he sought help from someone else, not Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Not only that, says, وَلَأَنْحِيَنَّهُ مِنْ قُرْبِ. I will distance him from my nearness. I will drive him away. Three strong words. Not only this, وَلَأُبَعْدَنَّهُ مِنْ فَضْلِي. With further emphasis, says, all the grace of mine, I will definitely drive him, distance him away from my grace, only for that one wrong which he did. And that is, he had hope in others, not in me. And then says, أَيَّهُمَّلُ غَيْرِي فِي الشَّدَائِدُ وَالشَّدَائِدُ بِيَدِي. That he has hopes in all these problems and afflictions in others. Whence these problems were created by me, it was me who brought forth these problems for him. And then he says, وَيَرْجُو غَيْرِي. He has hopes in others. وَيَرْتَرَعُ بِالْفِكْرِ بَابَ غَيْرِي. That is, in all these problems, what we do is that we knock every other door. We think of this person, this institute, that institute. But we never think of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. He says, even in your minds, you think of everything, you don't think of me. And then he says, وَبِيَدِي مَفَاتِيحُ الْأَبْوَابِ وَهِيَ مُغَلَّقَةٌ. In my possession, in my hands, are the keys to all of these closed doors. فَمَنْ ذَا الَّذِي أَمَّلَنِي لِنَوَائِبِهِ فَقَدْ تَعْتُهُ دُونَهَا. Says, is there anyone who had hope in me and I left him in despair? Never. Says, my servants, no matter how much they ask me, if I was to give each one of them what everyone asked from me, says, nothing will lessen from my kingdom, a kingdom which I have created myself. So here Imam says that mu'anjir, that is, you have to seek shelter, refuge in that safe haven of Allah, and then continue, says, akhlis fil mas'alati bi rabbik. That is, be sincere when you ask from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Why is that? Because it is in His hand that He gives, and it is Him who abstains. Then Imam says, talabul khayr min Allah. That is, you have to ask Allah for all the good. And by the grace of His, the Almighty Allah, we talked about quite a lot these days, about having a lot of hope in Him, being optimistic with Him, and whatever befalls before us, if it's good, it is from Him, it is bad, it is from us. All the goodness is His, all the bad is ours. And then he talks about istikhara. Istikhara in Arabic means to seek good, to ask for the good. And there are these different applicables. One of them is this istikhara, which is normally asked by mu'mineen. Now what does that exactly mean? Now for that also in du'as and riwayat, we have got different ways of doing it. And that is a person who wants this istikhara done. Istikhara means that his mind is not working. He cannot get to a conclusion. Now this too, if you put all of the riwayat and ayat aside, never have the ma'asumeen ever said that anything which blocks or unlocks your intellect, do it. You know, they say first and foremost, it's your aql, but you have to seek help from your aql. If your aql, if your intellect, if you can't decide what to be done, then seek an advice from others. And even if you couldn't get to a conclusion, then you do this istikhara, which we do it either with the tasbih or with Quran. Now that istikhara again, many a times it is misunderstood. People then call and ask for an istikhara. Now istikharas with the Sunni brothers do, it is like a fortune telling, that we have to tell them what the future is going to unfold. Istikhara, which we do, is not like that. Istikhara, it's because we couldn't come up to a conclusion, we seek help from Quran, and whatever the verse comes up, if it's the ayat of rahmah and mercy of Allah, we say it's good, and if it's the wrath of Allah, we say it's bad. So that is how it works. And many of the ulama, they don't even do istikharas when it comes to marriages and divorces. They ask first, if it's marriage or divorce, we will not do an istikhara. For marriages, for divorces, it is you who have to make your decision. If you find the spouse is the right person for you, istikhara is not required. If you find that he or she is the right match, and your witnesses and the advice you have seen from wherever you have to get that right advice, it's all good. Bismillah. Istikhara is not required. Ayatullah al-Uzma Jawadi Amuni, whenever people come to him for an istikhara, he says that his istikhara is just to a two-rakat prayer. And after his prayer, whatever you are inspired with, whatever comes to your mind, that is the result of the istikhara. That is another teaching that we have for istikhara. We continue with this inshallah tomorrow. Salam alaikum. We talked about being optimistic with Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, and for that quite a few examples were mentioned yesterday, that whatever we ask Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, or whatever is uttered by us, or whatever optimism we show, that happens. And for that many examples were given. And that is, balas, afflictions, they are hanging out above us. Whatever we say, it befalls. If we hope for the good, that bad is taken away. And if we utter that bad will fall upon us. And for that an example was mentioned, that Asiya, the wife of Firaun, she was standing by the Nile, a basket comes in front of her. She opens the basket and she sees a beautiful baby in it. She picks the baby and says that this baby will be the delight of my eyes, and I will take him as a son, I will adopt him. And because of that good intention which she had, that optimism which she had, she ends up as a sincere servant and she ends up in the heaven. Fir'aun also saw the baby and he says that this baby is that baby which I was informed will kill me, will ruin my room. As a result of which he also got ruined by what he said. The same thing was mentioned with regards to Prophet Ya'qub, that when the sons asked him to come, that they want to take him, he said that I fear that the wolf will eat him. And it so happened, the sons take him, and when they return, and he asks, where is Yusuf? Says, the wolves. They ate Yusuf. So it was Ya'qub who informed them, and they learned from the father. And another example which was mentioned regarding Fir'aun, that Fir'aun, he elevated all these ranks and became the ruler of Egypt, and then he claimed to be the god. And at that time, in one of these visions which unfold before him, Jibreel alayhi salam, he comes to Fir'aun and says that I have all these slaves, and one of them has stood against me. What do I do? Fir'aun says that you drown him. Jibreel, who was in the human form, says, okay, if these are the instructions of yours, write them and sign them and give it to me. Fir'aun writes, signs, and gives it to Jibreel. And as a result of what he had intended, what optimism or what pessimism he had for himself, that exactly unfolded for him. Riwayat, they say that had Fir'aun said that Allah, that is, you should be giving an opportunity to that individual to correct himself, that opportunity would have been given to Fir'aun to correct himself. Now coming to this topic again, that we have to be very optimistic to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. And before that, we talked about a little bit about the recital of salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
The reason why we recite salawat, it is the command of Allah taught to us in Surah Al-Ahzab. There it is the akhlaq of Allah, it is the etiquette, the adab of the angels that they recite salawat. Now what is that? Inna Allaha, that is indeed Allah, wa malaikatahu, and his angels, yusalluna ala nabi, send salutations upon the Prophet. That is Allah and his angels, they constantly send these salawat upon the Prophet. That is Allah, he sends his grace, he sends his mercy on the Prophet and his progeny. The angels also do the same. They seek the mercy and grace of Allah for the Prophet. So when we recite salawat ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad, we too become part and parcel of that entity and that institution of Allah and the Prophet, and we also send these salawats upon Rasulullah. And for these salawats, there is a lot of reward. It's among those du'as which enhances hope in Allah. It's one of those du'as which is never rejected, never denied, because it is what Allah does, it is what the angels do. And hadith says that in that mizan, in the balance, that is in the hereafter when the amal will be presented in that scale of balance, the heaviest action on the most rewarding amal is this salawat ala Muhammad ibn Ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
And I will quote you an incident, and that is, as a result of this salawat, a person, he is blessed with a special fragrance. One of the students, that is one of the great ulama in the study circle of marhum Imam Khomeini Ayatollah Gulbaygani, he says that when we were studying, there was a young man, there was a person, when he possessed a beautiful fragrance. And many a times we wanted to ask him, but we didn't have the courage to ask him that what is this fragrance you wear? And this fragrance was so strong that whenever he used to go to someone's house, he didn't need to ring the doorbell. People inside the house found out who is at the door because of the beautiful fragrance which he possessed. Says once when he came to the house and we found out it's him, I come and ask him, we know that this fragrance which you wear, it's nothing that can be bought in this dunya. It's something special. What is that? He says, in every community you have people, some they are da'im al-zikr, constantly their tongue it utters some type of recital, some type of zikr. Some people are, they recite Quran a lot. Some people a lot of prayers. Now the beauty of this person was that he recited a lot of salawat. He says that once in a vision, I see Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Present in that majlis, and there are a number of people, 40, 70 present. Rasulullah, he says that which one, who among you, recites the most salawat on me? Now he said that although I recite, but there might be someone else who recites more than me. So I was quiet, I didn't stand. He asks the same question for the second time. With the same answer in my mind, I sat down. For the third time, Rasulullah inquired, and for the third time I was quiet. And then he says, Rasulullah, he stood from his place. He came to me and he kissed me. As a result of that kiss of Rasulullah and that vision of his, he was blessed with this beautiful fragrance which was with him until he died. So that is the benefit of this salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One of the benefits. Loads of benefits are there, and inshallah, if an opportunity is given to us, we will talk on that as well. We talked about the Day of Judgment. One of the names which Allah possesses is Hasib, that is, He takes an account. We talked about the Day of Judgment, which is the Day of Judgment which is near. And also that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, He is Sari al Hisab. He is quick, fast in taking an account. And if there is a delay in this giving of an account, the delay is from us. He is fast, He is quick. And for that, the example also was given to keep it secure in our minds. It's the screening system that we have. It's if we just put everything out clearly, we'll cross the screening system quickly. And if everything is just jumbled up, piled up in that X-ray machine, it will be a repeat process and we have to go over and over again and we will be held. So holding areas in the hereafter, it's due to us. Allah is Sari al-Hisab, He is fast. In Suratul Ma'arij, Allah Ta'ala says, تَعْرُجُ الْمَلَائِكَةُ وَالْرُوحُ إِلَيْهِ فِي يَوْمٍ كَانَ مِقْدَارُهُ خَمْسِينَ أَلْفَ سَنَةً. That is, the angels, they ascend, and the spirit, on that day, the measure of that day is 50,000 years. The Day of Judgment, it is 50,000 years. Elsewhere in another ayah says that the measure of that day is 1,000 years. Now what is the difference? 50,000 years on one side and 1,000 years on the other. Mu'mineen who didn't have a lot to present, that is, no wrong, or the wrong wasn't that much, for them the day is going to be 1,000 years. Those who had heavy files to put forward, to present before Allah, the day for them will be 50,000 years. Now this too is can be seen in Riwayah. Says that if the actions were given to creation to be dealt with, the amal of an individual, it would take at least 50,000 years to deal with. Now we do find many of these lawsuits, even in this world, many of them take decades and decades, and many of these files are still open. So if that creation was to deal with these lawsuits of individuals in the hereafter, that 50,000 years will be required. For many ma'asumeen, they say, the duration of the day, on one hand we have 50,000 years, on the other hand we have 1,000 years. Ma'asumeen, they say that for mu'mineen, the duration of time it took for them to say their wajib prayers, that is how much they will be held in the hereafter. If the duration of time was 5 minutes, they would be held for 5 minutes. Now one of the children, in one of the lectures, he, after the majlis, came and said, "So Maulana, we have to say our prayers quickly so that we are not held over there." No, you have to say your prayers, you have to take your time, and you have to say your prayers with your presence of mind. Now whatever time it took for us to say our prayers correctly, that is the time that will be taken from us to be held in the hereafter. So mu'mineen, for them there is this special grace throughout. We talked about that quite a lot throughout these du'as that we have. And I'll give you an example of how a person has to talk to Allah when he presents himself. So Allah, He is Sari' al-Hisab, meaning that He is quick, He is fast. Ni'm al-Hasib, He is someone who is the best of those who takes an account. Ni'm al-Wakil, He is the best of those who can be relied upon. Ni'm al-Kafil, He is the best of those who you can be with. That is Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So we be good, we be on track. That is, don't distance from Allah Jalla wa Ala, all the good will fell on us, and all those benefits that have been mentioned for Mu'mineen will be benefited by us inshaAllah. And we have that hope that definitely we will benefit from that. Now what Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wa salam teaches us? One of the beautiful du'as that we have, the lengthiest of the du'as is du'a Abu Hamza Simali. To be recited, recommended every night in this month of Ramadan. Towards the end of this dua, Imam has three phrases. Now these three phrases have that optimism in Allah, that how we have to be optimistic and how we have to talk to us. Now what does it, now the other thing to bear in mind is that it is Ma'sumeen alayhim as-salam who have taught us how we approach Allah. That is, if they were not there, we would not know how to talk to Allah. We don't know how to talk to each other. How can we talk to Allah? So they have to be there to educate us how to approach Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So imamat is that beautiful concept, it is that beautiful blessing, or the greatest blessing that Allah has given to us. It says, Allahumma innaka anzalta fi kitabik annafwa amman zalamana. Imam says, Allah, in your book you have revealed that we have to forgive those who have oppressed us, those who have done wrong to us. وَقَدْ ظَلَمْنَا أَنفُسَنَا, and we have done wrong to ourselves. Says, فَعْفُ عَنَّا, God, you forgive us. Your instructions are that we forgive each other, the one who has done wrong. Now that we have done wrong onto our own souls, you forgive us. فَعْفُ عَنَّا. Why? فَإِنَّكَ أَوْلَى بِذَلِكَ مِنَّا. That is, you are better than us in forgiving us. We cannot forgive us. You have to forgive us, Allah. This teaching is your teaching. And that says, وَأَمَرْتَنَا أَلَّا نَرُدَّ سَائِلًا عَنْ أَبْوَابِنَا. Says, very beautiful, you instructed us that if someone comes to your door, a beggar comes to your door, and he extends his hands for his needs and requirements, you told us that we must not drive him away, we must not send him away. Says, وَقَدْ جِئْتُكَ سَائِلًا. Says, Allah, I have come to you, and I am begging, and I am asking from you. فَلَا تَرُدَّنِي إِلَّا بِقَضَاءِ حَاجَتِي. Says, Allah, you don't drive me away, but you give me what I want. That is optimism. That is, we have to have that optimistic opinion, optimistic iman, aqeedah with Allah, that as you told not to drive someone away, we have come to you, you also don't drive us away from you, give what we want. وَأَمَرْتَنَا بِالْإِحْسَانِ إِلَّا مَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُنَا. And you told us that good has to be done to those who are under us, working under us, to our employees, where today for example, or those who are weaker than us. If I have a position and there are others working under me, your instructions are that I have to be good to them. وَنَحْنُ عَرِقَاءُكَ. Says Allah, we are your slaves, we are your servants, you free us. you grant us that salvation. How beautiful, and with all that optimism Imam mentions over here. And that continues and concludes with that lengthiest dua that we have. So God, you keep your word, because you taught us, and we know that you will never lie. You are the most truthful. And then one of the other conditions that we have in du'as, if you want our du'as to be accepted, and we talked about it earlier, that we have to have all that hope. With a lot of optimism we come to Allah, that Allah give it to us. We want, and there is no one else apart from you who can give. Sometimes our du'as are not accepted because we haven't known God correctly. If we know Him correctly, we come to Him, we ask Him, He gives. Now if someone, for example, invites you, and that person who has invited is a kind person. Now when we come to his door and knock at his door, do we ever think that he will not open the door for us? This is really a human being. A human being has invited who is good, who is kind. And if we come and knock at his door, will he not open? He will definitely open. But this is Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, and that cannot be matched or compared to anyone. So he is all kind and all that mercy is there. A mother who is kind and she has funds, for example, and the son or the daughter, she is or he is in need of money. So that mother who is all kind and she has those funds, will she not help his or her son, his own child, her own child? She will definitely help. Multiply that by infinity for Allah, the Lord, he is that kind, that merciful. The love which Allah has, it cannot be compared to the love, for example, which Abdullah Hussein has. Abdullah Hussein has a lot of love. He gave away whatever he had, his blood, his wife, his children, his family, all that he had. And the noble, they say that it is as if he came to Karbala and whatever he had, he just spread out everything. I don't have anything left. It's all empty now. Whatever I had has been given to you. Now this Imam Abdullah Hussein, with all that love which he has, and he gave away everything in the way of Allah, compare him with Allah. Allah is much more kind, much more kind, much more merciful. And He forgives, He waives, He corrects everything. So our du'as, the reason why they don't elevate, they don't ascend, it is because we haven't known who the Creator is, who the giver is. Now I'll give you another example, and we'll conclude with this. Now the story of Hazrat Yusuf alayhi salam in Quran. Zulaikha, height of her beauty, she avails that sin for Yusuf, and then she tempts and she seduces Yusuf. Now what does Yusuf do? He runs away. Closed doors open up before him. And then the last door which was to open, there the king, Aziz al-Misr, he was present. And he sees Yusuf panicking, running out, and Zulaikha behind him. So she accused him of that indecent act. Now Yusuf, he is accused. He needs to be held. Because he is innocent, there was a baby in someone's lap, in a cradle, in that palace, and that baby speaks. Bears witness for Yusuf. Now what does the baby say? وَشَهِدَ شَاهِدٌ مِنْ أَهْلِهَا, that is, that infant was the cradle, says, إِنْ كَانَ قَمِيسُهُ قُدَّ مِنْ قُبُلٍ فَسَدَقَتْ وَهُوَ مِنَ الْكَاذِبِينَ. This Yusuf, if his robe, if his dress was torn from the front, then she is correct and he is a liar. And then the baby says, if Yusuf's clothes are torn from behind, then he is true and she is a liar. They turn and see, first of all, it's that infant who is talking, who is giving, bearing witness for Yusuf, and they find that Yusuf has clothes, they are torn from behind, and he is not accused, he is innocent. Now this time passes, Jibreel alayhi salam is with Prophet Yusuf, and Yusuf has become the Aziz, the king of Egypt, the ruler of Egypt. In the presence of Jibreel, a young lad comes. And this young boy says to Prophet Yusuf, that do you remember me? says, no. He says, I am the baby in the cradle who gave witness for you in your favor at that time. So Yusuf, he was so happy. Just for that one witness which saved his life, his honor, his dignity, that he gave that boy so many riches, gifts. And he was so happy with all that gratitude and devotion that was shown. Jibreel was present in that majlis. He was moved at seeing this scenario. And then he says, Yusuf, do you know that that one witness which that baby in the cradle gave for you, you gave away all those gifts and riches, and the devotion and gratitude of yours was shown to that boy. Do you know that five times a day, when a servant bears witness and says, Allahu Akbar, that there is no one, it's Allah who is the greatest, how happy Allah becomes. If you knew how happy Allah becomes, you would never imagine. That is the grace of Allah, kindness of Allah. Having these things in mind, if we increase our optimism in Allah, definitely we will get what we want. All this is a lesson to us, to me first, that Allah tabaraka ta'ala, He is on the watch out. There is no one kinder than Him. There is no one merciful than Him, more merciful than Him. There is no one more compassionate than Him. In these days of this glorious month of Ramadan, we ask Allah tabaraka ta'ala to help us know Him, to reduce the distance between us and Him. All of the good which He wants for us be granted to us. One of the things is that when we ask du'as, we start itemizing du'as. And when we start itemizing, because we don't know what the reality and the fact is, our du'as are very limited, restricted. It may be just .. 4 or 5 items in that du'a. Maybe wife, maybe children, universities, and if you have grandchildren, for their well-being, for jobs, mortgages, homes, only these are the basic du'as that we have. When the teaching is, Rabbana atina fid dunya hasana. That is, in this dunya, Allah grant us hasana. Wa fil akhirati hasana. Now what exactly that hasana is, we don't know. There is so much of good which we are unaware of. So we ask Allah for Him to give us all the good. For Him to give us all the good in this dunya and in the hereafter. رَبَّنَا آتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَا وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَا وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ اللَّهُمَّ اغْفِرْ لَنَا وَلِوَالِدَيْنَا وَلِمَنْ وَجَبَ لَهُ حَقٌّ عَلَيْنَا وَلِمَنْ وَصَّانَا بِالدُّعَاءِ ولجميع أمة محمد وآل محمد.